This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 19th of June, 1962. The title of this lecture is Do's and Don'ts of R3. This tape is 64 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Hey,
all right. So I'm going to talk to you now about the do's and don'ts of R3. Now, routine 3 is an ultimate in auditing, and frankly should be regarded as such. No auditor who is unable to keep the rudiments in, handle mid-rudiments, or do prep checking has any business whatsoever doing an R3 process. You can try, and you will fail. An auditor who doesn't know how to keep his rudiments in, keep his middle rudiments in, and prep check just has no business whatsoever doing routine 3, because he'll wind the PC up in a small ball, and that will be that. Some auditor, it's not terribly serious, some other auditor can come around and unwind the PC from this small ball, which is some more routine 3 processes, but it means a very significant auditing failure. And don't mark it down as anything else. It will be an auditing failure. Somebody trying to do routine 3 who cannot basically audit with perfection will chalk up a failure. That is all there is to that. There's no arguing with that point. I'm not saying this point so we can have classifications or any other reason. I'm just saying this point because it's true. If you want to be convinced of this sometime and you happen to be teaching a PE course, something like that, well, just take some book auditor out of the lot and set him down and say, all right, find this person's goal and list it out clear. And a few weeks later, you're going to hear some screams, telephone calls in the middle of the night from the local bin or something. God knows what'll happen, but it won't be clearing. Auditing successes are attained on a gradient. An auditor has to approach auditing on a gradient of successes. That is something you should sort of burn into the woodwork in an academy. An auditor approaches auditing on a gradient of successes. If he does not have a gradient of successes, he will not approach auditing. He will go further and further from auditing. Oh, he'll keep on, quote, auditing, unquote. But the less success you have, of course, the more likely you are to get an unusual solution. Now, not even all here have recognized right now that the school book solution is the solution. It doesn't need one eyedropper full of anything to make it work. As a matter of fact, will only work if you simply relax and do it. Now, it isn't the textbook solution because I tell you it is. I've been working on auditing as a framework and the training of auditors as an activity, completely aside from processes and technology, working on the framework of auditing for 12 years. You're not going to dream that up in a session. Man, you're not going to. I've had too many guys I've taught how to audit, and I've had the benefit of all of their mistakes. Their mistakes are absolutely fantastic. The things that a PC can get into are absolutely fantastic. The difficulties which you can confront by omitting what we now call textbook auditing parts are absolutely numberless. And the difficulties you can now get into with additives are absolutely numberless. Once upon a time, they used to string wires down along the Niagara Falls, and tightrope walk across them. I think sometime in the 90s was the great adventure by which they used to have people walking across Niagara Falls on a tightrope. They had to balance themselves very neatly. The wire, in this case, happens to be the textbook solution. There's only one other thing that I would add to the model session and so forth. Of course, you're getting a reworked version of model session just in the interest of instant reads and that sort of thing. That is possibly in the end rudiment, something on the order, in this session, have you made any decisions? It would go in just before the withhold question. I haven't finished experimenting with it, so. But that only thing that I have seen any reason to do anything about, and even then it would be quite unusual. Sometimes you'll could spot an ARC broken case that you wouldn't otherwise spot, and somebody who's hung himself up in the auditing session who might not otherwise have been hung up. Now, the natural impulse of the auditor is, when auditing doesn't work, to add something. Some reason or other, he never subtracts. He always adds something. Now, if you see some auditor adding things, that auditor does not have a reality of the workability at the level of process he is doing. Those are also letters of fire brands on the academy wall. If the auditor sees fit or finds it necessary to add something to model session, to do something else to get a list, to do something odd or unusual in order to get prep check questions and so forth, it hasn't worked for him. He hasn't had any success with what he's doing. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing something else. In the absence of a reality on result, then he adds. Now, this gets pretty wild. Here are some of the things you've added in the last 36 hours on routine 3. Now, naturally, you haven't got any reality on routine 3 processes. You never had any wins or successes with routine 3 GA, or any wins or successes with this method of finding goals or this method of listing. So naturally, you're going to add things. Now, if you were getting good results with prep checking, if you got very good results with prep checking when you were in prep checking class, right this minute, I'm sure you're in the frame of mind there isn't a single thing you would change about prep checking. That make sense to you? And if you got good results in your rudiments and having the sessions, if you got good results in those, is there anything you'd change about a rudiments and having the session? You see? And if I were to ask any of you who got a good result on your PC or consistently good results in rudiments and having the sessions, if you change anything about them, you'd say no. And we watch you go through a session, we could put you on the TV and watch you straight through a session on rudiments and having this, and you'd knock it off, pocket it. Fine. You wouldn't change anything, there'd be nothing added. All right, if you had good results in prep checking a PC and so forth, we put you on prep checking a PC, you're not going to add one single cockeyed thing. You're just going to walk right through it, pocket a pocket a pocket a pocket a pocket. But of course, doing routine 3GA, you're up against a brand new unknown. And the night is dark. And the things you're adding are absolutely unbelievable. But why would you add these things? Well, you'd only add these things because you yourself didn't have a reality on its working. So you think that you have to do something else to make it work. In view of the fact that you're not up against what is to you a high level of reality, you fall into the area of alter is. Alter is the bigness of the bank, so you're up against a don't know, and what keys in is alter isness. And some marvelous things happen. Listen to a few of these. Unbelievable. That an auditor who just finished up prep checking beautifully without any additive of any kind would all of a sudden fall into this pit or any of these. Making up oddball goal categories to keep a PC listing rather than getting the middle rudiments in. Well, we have a few. They are the middle rudiments categories. But somebody's been making up oddball categories. You know, just anything that came to mind, you see. The pressure trying to get the goal. Middle rudiments wildly out, see. So, and the PC, of course, not listing goals, so the auditor promptly moves in and gives a lot of oddball categories. In this particular instance, the one single instance where this happened, we had a category of sacrilegious goals. I think that's interesting. That arrived in another route, but it's an oddball category. Asking the PC what his goal is, or what he thinks the PC's goal is. You know, what do you think your goal is? Well, I don't know. Why not just dump a coal bucket over his head? That's what you're trying to find out. You mustn't ask the PC what he thinks it is, because you're just going to re-stimulate the living daylights out of him. He's going to sit there and he's going to all of a sudden go, he's perfectly calm a moment before, you see. You ask him something like this, an additive, and he goes, hey, what is my goal, see? You ask him this similar question. All right, do an assessment now. Thank you. Now tell me the last one in. Thank you. Same. Be identically the same result. PC can't do it. Of course, he goes, brrr, boom. After that, you can hear him moaning around, muttering, I wonder what my goal is. What is my goal? What is my goal? Up to that time, he's perfectly comfortable to list, you see. Not now. Not now. Now he's got a guess. So you just get a long list of wild guesses after you've done such a trick. Asking for only this lifetime goals. Now, we only want goals that have occurred to you in this lifetime. I'll tell you something. If you don't get a goal that's before this lifetime, you're not going to get any part of the GPM, because he's accumulated no GPM in this lifetime. The number of locks he has put on the GPM are quite slight. If you ask him only for this lifetime's goals, of course, and then you carefully made sure that he gave you nothing but this lifetime's goal, it would only accidentally get a harmonic of something he had had before. You've immediately almost obliterated your chances of finding the PC's goal by asking such a question. An auditor refusing to list to get rid of goals or negative goals or difficulty goals. Just saying, well, I'm not going to list that. This is from an old routine 3A activity of some kind or another. There's followed through in the wrong time and place. There is no such provision on 3GA of any kind whatsoever. No slightest provision. The PC gives it to you, you list it. to get rid of this headache I got at the beginning of session. Put it down, man, put it down. You know why you put it down? He's giving it to you because it's charged up. It's part of the goals channel. If you don't write it down, you won't bleed that much charge off of the bank. You're not listing goals to bleed charge, but you can't find the goal unless you have bled the charge. Putting in oddball reality factors. One of the things in the TRs, this TR admittedly hasn't been issued at this time, but an evaluative R factor put into the session is verboten. This would be a broad example. You are such a difficult case that... And actually, an auditor did do just that here, just in the last day and a half. You're a patch-up case. That's not an R factor. That's a mud ball. Now, here's another one. Scratching goals off the list when the PC wants them off after he has put them on the list. Oh, we haven't done that for ages. You never take anything off a list. I found out that the PC would take off of lists the thing it was. But you got it onto the list by a fluke. And it would be the first one the PC would take off. Well, it's the most hidden thing. It's the most withheld thing. So, of course, he'll look at that and he'll... Oh, well, that really isn't a goal of mine, you see, to kiss women. That really isn't a goal. He'd like to hide that. And he will by taking it off the list. So if you're lucky enough to get anything on a list, you, for God's sakes, never take it off. All right. Now, varying the tone of voice on embarrassing-type goals. Now, this has been with us from the earliest goals assessment. You must not vary your voice tone or degree of loudness for any reason whatsoever. I'll give you an idea. To catch catfish. To kiss girls. To run downhill. And you know why you mustn't do that? Because an auditor will unconsciously evaluate as to what the PC's goal is. That's the main crime. This actually was used to keep the PC from being embarrassed, auditing in a room with other PCs. He found some embarrassing goals, so he said them softly. But look here. The real reason that you would never vary your voice doesn't lie in that nonsensical reason thing. The real reason lies elsewhere. It waits the goal. You must not wait a goal. If you permit change of loudness and change of emphasis as you're nulling a goals list, then you can throw the PC's attention or belief. You can actually do an evaluate with it, you understand? And it would be like this. You may have decided unconsciously, more or less, that this PC's goal was to fly kites, you see. He always talks about kites and so on. You've got it all figured out. There's a lot of goals like it. Auditor's perfectly all right to figure out what your PC's goal is. As long as you follow this other rule, read them all in the same loudness and tone of voice, the same emphasis. Don't ever emphasize one goal more than another. Because you'll come down the list and you'll say, to catch catfish. See? And then you'll get this one that you thought was real good. Okay? You'll say, to fly a kite? Oh, that's out. That's that's just doing another niche, you see, but it'll wait the goals list for the PC. He sees you're disappointed, he sees all this sort of thing. Devil with it, just do a mechanical rundown. Same loudness, same pitch, same intonation. Now, not getting middle rudiments in well. And by the way, we find out now that because you've got good reality on them, of course you are getting in the beginning and end rudiments very well. Not getting in your middle rudiments, which I think is marvelous. How possibly can you do this, you know? What are they? They're just some more rudiments. You know, they're gotten in the same way, the same thing. Check a session afterwards and you find the middle rudiments have been out during the session. Well, how could they be? If you got them in, so on. Well, true enough, the middle rudiments go out more often than the beginning and end rudiments on a routine three-type process. But admittedly, they do. But they couldn't be that much out. You see, if you've gotten them in four or five times in the session, something like that, how could they be out very much? And yet they have been found out. And the next one is suggesting goals. In that, if the PC has done something in this life, he must have had a goal to do it. You know, getting goals surreptitiously. Like, what have you done in this lifetime? Well, I was a streetcar conductor. Well, fine. Did you have a goal to be a streetcar conductor? You know why you don't evaluate on any goals list? Why you must shun it like mad on a routine three activity? Just shun it, man. Run like mad from evaluation. Because the suggestion of the auditor is an alterisness of the goal, and what is wrong with the goal's channel is it is alterised. So you alterise the alterise, and when you've got that, the thing will now react till your evaluation has been picked up, and you will have the wrong goal. You can always get a, quote, get a goal on the PC and look good simply by in the middle of the session sometime, toward the end of the middle of a late session and so forth. Just say, I've noticed recently that you chew gum. Isn't it true that you have a goal to chew gum? The PC said, well, not really. You really do have a goal to chew gum, don't you? Well, look, you chew gum, don't you? Well, yes. Well, then you must have had a goal to chew gum at some time. Well, I guess I must have. Good. So we put that on the list. And it'll read now with a single tick and with every other indication that it is a goal. It'll read beautifully. It will check out as long as nobody prep checks the middle rudes. And if you neglected to prep check the middle rudes on that goal, it will stay in much better than any other goal. As a matter of fact, it's the only goal that will stay in. Because, of course, as long as it's in, the rudiments are out. Change one word in the wording of the goal, and that goal will read at that point of word change. If you change the next to the last word in a goal and you're reading an E-meter badly so that the meter is actually reading across the last word in the goal and you've changed the next to the last word in the goal, that goal will go on reading like that, right? On. Every time you say it, it'll go until, of course, you prep check the middle roots in. That one's particularly dangerous because I've seen it persist until the actual word that was alteris was picked up. You see how dangerous it is to suggest something to somebody. In any way, you can say, have you had any suppressed goals? Are there any goals you've suppressed? Or any goals you've invalidated? Have you had any goals that you have invalidated? It's a better question. Have you had any goals you have failed to reveal? And have you had any goals you have been careful of? Of course, there's your middle rudiments. Naturally, it would be coincidental the same goals that would be out would exactly parallel the middle rudiments. And you don't want any goals that have been suggested, so you wouldn't add that in any way. Now, I'm not roasting you. I'm trying to get you to learn a lesson off of all this. And the lesson I want you to learn is actually in relationship to teaching other auditors, many of whom will do just that. An auditor actually will do perfectly the textbook solution only so long as, having done the textbook solution, he has achieved a gain thereby. And if he has consistently been able to apply the textbook solution and achieve a gain, you wouldn't be able to blast him off the textbook solution with dynamite, TNT, and atomic fission. He'd stick to it. But where an auditor has not done a process to success, you can expect either he has not done the process, you understand, or he's never done a full cycle on the textbook solution, even though he's trying to use it, or he has altered it in some way so that it didn't work and so on, you will find that an alter-isness will very easily be introduced by the student. The student will introduce alter-isnesses all along the line because it's not a set reality. It's something that looks very insecure to him and something that is subject to many changes. And so on. So you actually have to ride herd on those ponies. You have to ride herd on them hard. And frankly, it takes that much supervision. And that's basically probably why nobody could pick up a bulletin out in the field and do R3 and come up with the goal and list it out without any further coaxing of any kind whatsoever. Unless he had himself been utterly sold on the idea that the earlier thing he'd been doing, prep checking, by textbook solution, was perfect and was gaining perfect results for him, then he might tend to follow through. But I even then don't think he would. I think it takes a lot of horse wrangling. I'm not trying to tell you that the textbook solution is the perfect solution. I'm only trying to tell you it's more perfect than one which will be evolved in one session by one auditor. That's 12 years I've sweat over, not hot brains, but sweat over wet palms which were leaning over hot brains. The students who have been auditing PCs over a long, long period of time, and the duplication is so slight that you easily go into despair. But the duplication will be as slight as it isn't working. They're directly proportional. The less it works, the less duplication you're going to get. Now, in that we have had things that, even if duplicated, would have gotten a tedious result or a long result or occasionally would have walked you into a box that you couldn't easily have gotten out of, don't you see? Old auditors, knowing this, already have developed an interpolative attitude toward technology which debars their use of exact technology at the time you get up to an exact technology, you see. So that itself tends to cut it out. The textbook solution that you're using now, I don't think you have any reality, actually, on what prep checking will do. Maybe one or two of you have. Well, what prep checking will, no, I don't even want to do it yet. What prep checking will actually do on raw meat, addressed straight in the direction of a neurosis. Somebody is strictly fruitcake, you know. They go out every day in their pajamas and shoot pigeons, you know. And you prep check them, following the various lines and rules of prep checking, and use as your have question exactly what they are doing in just this variation. They're going out every day and shooting pigeons. So you assume that there are overts against pigeons, that there are overts against somebody who went out every day and shot pigeons. You see? You just assume the mechanics of it, that they have overts on whatever they have neuroses on. And you just do a land off of business. You have any idea how fast this would be? Do you know how fast this would be if you just went out like that? Oh, something like 12 and a half hours to a complete release of a major neurosis if you went straight at it, hammer and tongs. Mm-hmm. This person can't live because they have an absolute terror, traffic. complete terror. And they can't go uptown and they can't go shopping and so forth. Well, we boil it down, we find out, they tell us, they have a terror against traffic. Well, it's what have they done to traffic, and what have they done to somebody who had an absolute terror about traffic? You see, it's what have they done to somebody who had their exact neurosis, and what have they done to the various things which compose the neurosis? And by the time you separate out all the items which might compose that particular battiness, you'll find out you've only consumed a few hours of prep checking. Now, they're quite interested, too, by the way, I might comment on that. Quite interested, because you're right on a center line of fixation. How could they be otherwise than interested? No Freudian analyst could do this in 1,000 hours of analysis. But what you could do now in just a few hours of prep checking. I mean, you could do the job. They couldn't do the job. See? And you certainly haven't got a full reality on how far even prep checking goes. But I think you do know that prep checking on a fellow student does work, and it swept along, and it was fine. And the closer it was to a textbook solution, the easier it was to do. Did you notice that fact? That the difficulties that you were having, you were interjecting. Well, all difficulties are additive. One has added the difficulties. So anyway, that you should be very aware of, both as an auditor learning a new procedure of some kind, and as an instructor working with students, and you're getting on the telephone, somebody calls you from Lumbago, West Queensland, see? And they call you up and say, I've got this PC in session, and he just keeps screaming, what do I do, you see? And you're fool enough to give him some directions. Well, go ahead, by all means, give him the directions. But he got the PC screaming by doing something unusual. He isn't going to tell you what that is because he doesn't spot it as unusual, see? And now you're going to give him some instructions, and he's going to alter his those. Well, give him the straight dope and hope. But don't be shocked if nothing ever came of it. Because you're already dealing with somebody who's going to alter his, because he got there by alterizing. Oh, yes, by all means, give straight dope out over the telephone to West Lumbago. By all means. But, don't be so damn hopeful about it. And don't be so curious why it is you will start to get an incredulity in your area. You'll say, well, you want to know how to find a what question. Well, here's a bulletin, read it, you know. Yeah, read bulletin. That's right, that answers your question. All right, it's all taken care of. You can come back in half an hour, and this guy has got a PC in session. And he's sitting there saying, what? Then, what? The PC says something, he says, thank you. What? The PC says something, he says, thank you. he isn't stupid, it's just never worked for him, so he does something else. See? Now, there is the primary barrier which you have to cross in instruction, and the primary barrier to getting things across. That is to say, you, of course, in teaching things to somebody on a set procedure, of course, are teaching something on which they have no reality because they haven't done it. So you have to make up for that lack of reality with horse wrangling. Just assume it's going to happen. Don't go into a decline and despair and keep your derringer oiled up to blow your brains out with. There's no point in all that. It's just be fully prepared to be far, far more suspicious than you would ordinarily credit it ever being necessary to do. And one of the basic things, all of a sudden this auditor suddenly starts doing a terrific job. The PCs start getting along fine. Everything's along fine. And you have no trouble and fine. Everybody thinks, you know, you and any other instructor around here think he's doing fine. What magic happened? Well, he just got a reality on the process. It wasn't that his learning process got any better. See, he suddenly got a reality that what he was doing was what he should be doing, and that by doing that, he achieved a reality of result. So now he gets a reality on the procedure he's doing, so it's an acceptable procedure, and it's something after that why he'd say, well, why get off the M1? Okay. But up to that, he was on B23427. Okay. It wasn't M1. And it looks up all of a sudden, it's just straight away, 120 miles an hour. So that's the phenomenon that takes place, is that. Now, in spreading routine 3, you're going to run into many difficulties in teaching somebody else to do routine 3. And they're basically composited just on what I've been giving you. Yes, it's an involved process. Well, you say, why on earth then do we do prep checking and these lower processes if routine 3GA is such a splendid process? Well, in the first fact that the case has to be prepared, but you've got to have some security that the fellow has got a security on auditing. You see, teach him something that will work and then make him do it till it works. And then he gets this win, and then after that he's willing to do the procedure which he's going to use in routine 3GA, you see. He's at least going to do that model session in the middle roots. He knows those work. Well, that's 3/4 of your battle. It's bringing about a reality. Now, instruction up to this time on this planet, of course, has consisted of simply, if they didn't learn it, you shot them. See? In other words, if a person was unwilling to learn something or they couldn't learn something, well, you just stack up the penalties about not learning it, see? You just stack them up and stack them up and stack them up. Well, their mother and father are going to throw them out in the street. They're going to be disinherited by their grandfather, you see? The school board's going to fix it up. They give lectures about the fact they'll be digging ditches the rest of their life, you know? They'll never have an old school tie to stir their soup with, you see. And give them all kinds of terrible things and horrible fates and threats, you see. And that sort of thing. Well, on a subject which isn't an actual subject, such as they teach on this planet, of course, that's nonsense. That is simply beating somebody's head in. And it is beat their head in and beat their head in. And eventually they give up and say, yes, Hadrian discovered America in 1167 B.C., yes. And they'll say anything, you know. Well, you've gotten training at the expense of judgment. You wonder why leadership amongst man gets worse and worse, and why we have Nikita Kennedy and Jack Khrushchev. You wonder why these boys can't seem to make any decision that has anything to do with it. I think a guy, the Secretary of Defense of the United States, yesterday or today, made a statement that Everybody must now sign something or other to bomb only non-military targets with atomic fission. See? And they were not to bomb cities. This is Secretary of Defense of the U.S. trying to make a pact with Britain and trying to push it down the throats of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other people, you see, and trying to get them signed that they will only bomb military objectives with atomic fission. Well, this is very, very interesting. And the British group up here told them, well, Britain was so small that it would be impossible to separate a military from a non-military objective anyhow, so they didn't think that they had better sign the pact. Of course, these things are bombing now at the rate of a 60-mile radius. They're getting there up to super bomb. Now, how do you select out of a circle 120 miles in diameter or something like that? The military target is not much. You see, they've invented some new protons, and they're called begatrons. And a begatron, you see, avoids all non-military targets. And it was very simple. They finally got it all worked out, you see. And the other types, you see, they're attracted by military-type targets. So it's perfectly safe. You just throw a bomb with these mixed particles in it, you see, and it just sorts itself out and attacks the proper targets, you see. And this is very simple because it's been stated by the Secretary of Defense. You see? That's why it's true. How do you get stupidity like that? You get an educational line on subjects which were non-extant. You get non-extant subjects, you know, just dream-ups. It's very funny. Only the universities keep reiterating that we dream up Scientology, you see. That is their primary accusation. And if you fret-check them, they knew damn well that their subjects were all dream ups. And the medical profession, you see, says we don't know our business. It's marvelous, you know. Why don't they wear a badge on their chest, man? And the psychiatrists say we're a bunch of quacks. Down in South Africa, the psychologists say that we're again the Afrikaner. How they do confess, man. But the university is always yapping about the fact that we're not a science. Now, they've never even defined a science. They are just loaded with imaginative subjects. One of the most imaginative subjects you ever wanted to have anything to do with is any humanity in a university, any one of these humanitarian subjects, or even as far as economics. If you're in a walking nightmare to nowhere, why open up an economic textbook? It says if the demand exceeds the greater, then the supply isn't, and all kinds of things, other rules and laws they worked out. Marvelous. And if somebody doesn't pass these things, he doesn't get his old school tie to stir soup with, you know? That's pretty serious. Family, disgrace, never get a job in the government. Nobody ever pay attention. Nobody speak to him. Never be able to belong to a country club. Never own more than two cars. You know, a life of sheer necessity and desperation stares him in the teeth, you see. Unless he says the economics of hooba hoobung are all square rooted on the bugga bugga, you know. He does. He just sits there and he says this. Some guy got A on the subject. Economics, A. You ask his advice on an investment. Boy, have you had it. They say you never take legal advice from a modern lawyer. More businessmen have told me that, successful businessmen. Legal advice, don't ever take legal advice from a lawyer, and never take financial advice from an accountant. or economist. Well, what are these guys supposed to do? Well, you just, I don't know what they're supposed to do, but men who have succeeded never take advice from either one. Pretended subjects. Well, you see, you have to keep after somebody with a club and an axe on a pretended subject. Because he never will get a reality on its working. Because it doesn't work and it doesn't go anyplace. So if he never gets a reality on it, he, of course, will never do it. You just get further variations of it, but you have to use the most fantastic duress to even keep him in a classroom going through this subject. You see? Look at the amount of hidden and covert duress, social punishment, and other things connected with education. Well, nothing to do with judgment. It's if you memorize the text, well, you're all set. All right, now, we're in conflict with this because many people in Scientology have been educated this way and know the falsity of it. Now, we all of a sudden ride up alongside and we say, you do exactly this, this, and this, with no variation. And it looks like the same thing. But look, there's a difference. There's a difference. Because all of a sudden the duress is removed. It's actually removed at that time when it's the same thing. Instructors and I are always having the same type of conversation. Well, can he do it? You know? She can do it. He can't do it yet. Okay. This is about the gist of these conversations. Well, what part of it can't he do is a secondary consideration. But we all want to know, can he or she do this final operation? Well, of course, we know he or she can do the final operation because he or she has got a consistent, comfortable result and because they're not inventing all of a sudden. See, there's not a bunch of newnesses and alterisms coming up. It must be working for them, you see? And then they get very comfortable about it and they look more and more comfortable about it. You've been over the jump, some of you, on this already. And you notice there's suddenly no pressure on you. Well, it isn't that you've been grooved into something by hypnotism or something. But your reality was substituted for the duress. Well, isn't it funny that your reality could have more power to hold you on in grooves than the duress? Well, of course it could, because you're getting a result. And if you're getting a result, then you're able to accomplish what an auditor is doing, and that's the way to get a result. You already had the reality of not getting a result some other way. And so you say, well, that's it, and that's fine, and you plow through. This has a great deal to do with routine 3GA, or a routine 3 process, because I call something to your attention. When a person's goal has not worked, the individual has done something else. And listen, that's all the trouble there is with him. He didn't follow, he didn't do what he said he was going to do, you know. He had a goal, and he had a goal to play a piano, so he started throwing eggs. He had a goal to farm and so forth, so he went into the city and got a job in the telephone office. That's all that happens to him, and now he looks sadder and sadder and more apathetic. He isn't winning in life, you see. And it's actually very easy to make somebody's life a complete misery and disappointment. Just carefully find out what he's supposed to be doing in life, what he thinks he's supposed to be doing, carefully, and then use all of the bulldozers you possibly can to force him to do something else. And he is going to be an aberrated mutt, man. You never quite saw as much aberration scattered around the wits of some poor kid whose parents have had great expectations. You know, they do it with a smile and a kiss, you know, as they push the poniard in the back. The child, unfortunately, one day, as Thetan one day, picked up this body whose aunt was a successful actress. And because the aunt has the fortune of the family and everybody else, why, this kid finds that she is about to become an actress. And this is wild, you know. And the further they go in life, further this person goes in life, the unhappier they get. And they might even make a third-rate actress. See? But it'd be a very nutty actress. That's all you'd have to do, you see, to produce all manner of collision and upset. That is below the level of impact, below the level of knocking people out and hypodermicizing them and electric shocking them and giving them impacts and working the love-hate cycle and betrayal and dialectic materialism and psychologosis and all other aberrated practices, besides making them run through rat mazes and pick up cheeses and other human activities. You can produce a small amount of aberration that way, but the basic method, I'll tell you right straight off the cuff, of producing a nice, big, juicy aberration, see, is this character has got a basic goal, and it goes this way, and then you stand over him with a cotton-picking club for years and get all of life standing around with loaded guns, making the person go that away. Not just say to the person's, your goal is wrong, and resist his goal or oppose his goal. That's not what I'm talking about. No, just make him do something else. It has to be complete departure from the goal. Now his whole life is an alterisness. His whole life is based on a falsity. And some of you, sometime or another, will find out that, we have already had a student who had a goal, I think, something on the order of never to be a doctor. And so forth. Here and there you'll have some student with a goal which is diametrically opposed to being an auditor. Well, it's perfectly all right in Scientology to use a club on him, man, to push him into line, because if you're doing anything like a good job, the next thing you know, why, you're doing routine 3GA or some even more advanced routine, naturally. You've picked that up. So there's no liability to it whatsoever. You get the idea? We're talking about the business of livingness. But let's carefully badger little Rollo until little Rollo has decided unequivocally that he's going to be a streetcar conductor. And I'll fix it up so he becomes a naval officer. And then wonder why it is that he drinks or wanders in and out of jail or gets this or gets that or gets the other thing, and then he just keeps being on the skids all the time. Well, there's one for the commies, I suppose, one of these days. I doubt they'll ever use that, though. They couldn't duplicate that well. They probably would duplicate it like this, that you let everybody do exactly what they want to do, and that will spin them in. And if we convince them of this, why, everybody'd win, you see. We probably ought to tell a psychologist the trouble and the real cause of aberration, you see. The real cause of aberration is letting people do exactly as they please. And if you let them do exactly as they please, you see, spin them in. Ruin them. Absolutely ruin them. Textbooks out. How to do as you please, you know. The results of duress, force, energy, smoke, and all the rest of it, of existence, are expressed from departure from a basic goal. Now, nobody would do any auditing if he didn't have a desire to help his fellow beings. That's a rather basic and fundamental goal, not necessarily the goal, but it is a certain part of a goal. Furthermore, there sometimes in the background is a feeling that one doesn't deserve to be helped unless one can help a bit. There are other feelings of this character. These are quite fundamental fundamentals. And factually, they override auditing, overrides these rules, just as it overrides human aberration. I can think of times when I might have had a goal never to be an auditor. You walk out of session, you know, and you've had everything crossed up one way or the other. Never again. Next guy that walks in the front door, the easiest and best thing to do is simply put a trap gun there. And yet, when the doorbell would ring, why, you say, hello, come in, sit down. Therefore, you show somebody a positive channel, which does help another and does bring about a realization of those more fundamental humane goals, and they will follow that channel. They will do what will help, but they actually don't want to do it as long as they feel it won't. Now they feel it's going up against their various goals, like it's deriding and overthrowing their individuality, and it's doing this and it's doing that. But that, in essence, is what we're trying to do in routine 3GA. You could therefore expect an enormous amount of alter-isness on any process, and particularly on something which is straight against alter-isness, such as 3GA. So you have to be very careful in doing it, to do it very precisely and very simply without additives. And in teaching it, you have to make awfully, awfully sure that it doesn't get altered every time you turn around and additives are entered into it. They'll be entered into it even before they're needed. And this is climbing Mont Blanc. On a Sunday afternoon, you see, on the wrong side. People in doing it, of course, may be going up against innumerable factors, all of which tend to compel them to alter the way they are doing it, and so forth. And all you have to do is just hold your course steadily, and you see that it did work out. You actually finally are sitting there one day, and every time you say a goal, it goes tick. You didn't believe it could ever happen, you know. You really didn't know up to that point that you didn't believe it. And you say to catch catfish, tick. What? To catch catfish, tick. Check it all out, get all the evaluations and validations and everything else on me. To catch catfish, tick. Hey, look at this. You feel like getting your fellow auditors over to take a look at this thing, you know. That's pretty remarkable. And yet all the time, why, you intellectually knew that that would happen, but you hadn't seen it. Well, if you get at it in some circuitous route that you yourself didn't quite understand, the next time you do it, you will try to duplicate your own route. And you can accidentally find one of these things about 20 out of 100 without following the rules. Trouble is, the rules are securing to you the other 80 that you wouldn't find with an oddball procedure. It isn't that you will never find one with an off-ball procedure. It's just 80% of the time you won't with an oddball procedure. You see? That's the difference. Well, the do's and don'ts are do the procedure, do it without alteration, run your session without additives or interjections. Just relax. And pilot it on through. And at the other end, you will all of a sudden say, hey, what do you know? The little girl who doesn't believe that she can make a cake and doesn't believe the recipe will end up in one seldom does make a cake. And if they do, it'll be quite remarkable. 4 dozen eggs, 3 pounds of sugar, 1 cup of flour, 1 bottle of vanilla. Two shakers full of salt. See, it's on the basis that you can't make a cake anyway. So how you make it isn't really necessary to know. You see? And then you'll see some old lady with some off in the Middle West or the farm or something like that, and she's apparently doing something else. And you hear something hit the bottom of a pot with a swish swish of beating up something and something of the sort, and all of a sudden there's a cake and a couple of pies on the table. They're perfect. They're absolutely delicious. And then she's the other extreme. You say, "What's your recipe?" And she damn near goes mad trying to think of how she does it. Work that way with you someday. Somebody will come along and they say, "Well, how do you do routine 3GA? You see, you haven't seen a bullet in 100 years. Oh, well, let's see. Well, it's very important to prep check your rudiments. That's very important to prep check your rudiments. That's really how you do it. And to null everything out until you get it. Yeah, now you understand. Okay? All right, thank you. People will sit there. You look very baffled, you see. And you'll say, "What's the matter with you? What's the matter? Haven't I told you adequately? Haven't I told you adequately?" And then some timid soul lifts his hand, one finger, you know. "Do you use an e-meter?" Okay, take a 10-minute break. Thank you.